We've all had this where the first time we do something, you know, it takes 2 hours. The second time we do something, it takes 90 minutes. Next time it takes an hour. And then you begin to develop the systems. And then what I try to do is I try to chunk it in advance. Like these strategy and briefing calls we do every month on the Renegade Pastor. I mean, I've got 90 minutes with you, and you expect me to deliver something 60 minutes of that time, and 30 minutes of it's Q&A. So, like, that's a pretty good addition to my schedule when we started the Renegade Pastors Network last year. The books wasn't such a big deal. Interviewing the authors wasn't such a big deal, because I was already reading the books anyway. So now I just, you know, marked up the questions as I read the books. But adding that, so what I do is I start writing next month's talk as soon as this month's talk's over. It's one of the reasons I preach in series, because I can add to next week's message what I didn't get into this week's message. So there's a compounding effect inside of the research, but you begin to figure out how much time it takes to get something done. He says he suggests you should use a timer. I know a very famous copywriter who uses a two-minute egg timer. And he's got the little egg timer. He sets it for 2 minutes, and he tries to write out as many headlines for the copy as he can. I have what I call 15-minute task, 30-minute task, and hour task. And I've literally got a little hourglass. I have a 15-minute hourglass. I bring it out a lot of times in meetings. You've seen it, right? Mm-hmm. Had a guy in Old Town Barcelona build it for me. It's got 15 minutes on it. So if we have to go into a discussion in a meeting about something that sometimes is rather complex, you know, we turn it over 15 minutes, see how much we can get done during that 15 minutes. It's just a game. It's not for everybody, but it's a game. I use a website called online-stopwatch.com. And you can open up a little window in there. Like, I try to keep my desktop clean, and I like that program that wipes everything away, and I don't have any kind of notifications. You know, you can tweet about me and Facebook me and all that stuff. I won't know it till I log on. In fact, I've turned off all my automatic log-on, so I have to literally log in to see it because I don't want to be interrupted with that. But put that little online thing up there and let it go. All right, he says, then, number two, you want to crush, I love this, crush the cockroaches of the productivity world. New York City, living up there, taught me a number of things. Like, it taught me how to run over old ladies in the subway train, because it's either run over or be run over. And so it taught me that. It taught me how one old lady can block the entire sidewalk. And it's like you're trying to walk down the way, just like this one old lady can block the entire sidewalk. I can tell you I haven't spent much time in New York. It's another thing it taught me is that sometimes it's hard to tell the cockroaches from the rats. So I'm like, is that a cockroach? Is that a rat? Is that a rat? Is that a cockroach or whatever? So then I moved to Florida and I learned what cockroaches are. They don't call them cockroaches in Florida. They have this nice little sounding name down in South Florida. You know what I'm talking about? Palmetto bugs. Yeah, as if that's better, you know. Oh, yeah, it's like, oh, that's a palmetto bug. Yeah, he just hung himself with one of my ties in the shower. That's a palmetto bug. Yeah, there, good Lord, what is that thing? Yeah, wife comes in. I had one the other day. Got up in the corner of the house. We're about to go to bed. I'm like, just leave it there. I mean, it's probably been up there all day. It's not really, I mean, it's like our, you know, our bed, it was on my side of the bed, too. Like, if it had fallen, it would have hit me. It was nowhere near Kelly. But, like, I had to deal with this. I couldn't find it. I mean, like, I couldn't reach it with a shoe. I mean, it was too, the ceilings are in the bedroom are too high, you know. I had to go get the Swiffer. Do you know the Swiffer? So I had to, like, get the Swiffer, like, kind of get him in the corner. But then, like, the head of the Swiffer is really fluid. And then it's like a disaster. I mean, I'm here like 11:30 at night trying to get this thing. I'm like, I got a Renegade Pastors Conference this weekend. It's like, I got it. Then the cleanup was worse, you know, because now I had to go put the thing on the Swiffer because I killed him like when the thing was naked. So now I had to put the Swiffer thing and like, you know, clean it off. And no, I think it's just the way the light's hitting. It's gone. So you've got these cockroaches in your schedule. I mean, you know, you're sitting there trying to work, and like this palmetto bug's like walking right across your desk, and it interrupts you, and so you got to go, you know, you got to deal with it. So here's what he says. He says, look for those little time fillers that you might usually think take 10 or even 20 or, God forbid, 30. He writes minutes. These are the cockroaches of the productivity world, little pests that do nothing but make your life a pain in the backside. Pains that you can't seem to get rid of no matter how much you run around the house with a shoe or bug spray or a Swiffer in my case. So what are those little cockroaches in your schedule? He lists a few. Checking email. great productivity book that I recommend in the time management resource is called Never Check Email in the Morning. Work on your most important task first and then get to email. And then what he suggests is even if you do have to check email, you put a time limit on it. Reading the blog feeds. I mean, there's really only one you should read. That's mine. Everybody else, you should just cut it out, you know. But if you're going to read the blog feeds, put a time limit on it. I'm a big fan of reading the paper. I'm the last guy in America that likes to read the paper. Anybody else like to read the paper? I like to handle it. I like to touch it. I like to read the paper. And here's what I like about the paper versus television. Television says I got to sit through four or five things to get to what I want to hear. And then when they get to it, they spend 30 seconds on it, you know. And then, like, blogs are not editorialized. There's nobody checking the facts on a blog. There's nobody editing a blog. Somebody at least still edits the newspaper. So, you know, whether you read it online with your apps or whatever. So I get the paper. I get the USA Today. I get the local paper. I don't always read the local paper. But I give myself 15 minutes to read the USA Today. Then if there's an article that I want to tear out, I might put it in my file for a little bit later. But I've basically found I can read it in 15 minutes just as easily as I can read it in 30. Because then I just find myself, like, you know, reading stuff I'm really not interested in, you know, picking up on things that, you know, reading editorials. I don't really care what somebody else thinks. I'll make up my own mind about it. But, yeah, I just, so, you know, it's really interesting. When you check email, give yourself a timer. He says if you normally check email for 20 to 30 minutes each morning, but you're not ready to take that away, give yourself 5 minutes. 5 minutes. And when I look at all the emails, it's amazing how much you can get done just in that time. But not 30 minutes. If you're going to read the blogs, but, you know, 5 minutes a day. Don't give these tasks any more attention until you've completed everything on your to-do list that day. That's where you want to get to. At which point, you can then indulge in some email reading, social networking, feed reading to your heart's content. So you get the most important things done first. So you got to look out for these cockroaches. I don't know what they are for your life. I have some things I'm greatly interested in. I subscribe to a Jimmy Buffett blog feed because I like Jimmy Buffett. I got a bunch of inside country music stuff because I like to read country music. And there can be a place for all of that. Just not if I'm under, you know, first thing in the morning, if I'm under a deadline for writing. Later, after I get it all done, if I schedule 60 minutes and I'm done in 55 minutes, yeah, I need that little moment to catch my breath and read and, you know, tell a joke or read something of interest. He finishes this article, and it's at lifehack.org if you want to check it. He says, you can experiment with Parkinson's Law and, I don't know how to say this word, squashing your deadlines down to the bare minimum in many areas of your life. Just be conscious of the line between bare minimum and not enough time. Seems reasonable. What you're aiming for is a job well done in less time, not a disaster that's going to lose your employment or clients. So you want to be careful with that. So you can't schedule, you know, you still got to get the sermons done. They expect you to say something new every week. How dare they? Okay. So those are just two parenthetical comments about the unified calendar and about Parkinson's Law. Now, if I have time tomorrow, I have several others of those that I can get to at the end, just not necessarily central to what I'm saying, but parenthetical comments along the way. Everybody good? All right, you learned something already? All right, want your money back? I'll get to that just before we go to lunch. So everybody gets their money back anyway. So, you know, Scott has a money-back guarantee. Everybody's going to get their money back before lunch. All right, so I've got these five, and I don't really know where to start. I've been thinking about it. So I'm going to start with the first pillar and take some time on this one. This is one you've probably heard me say before. So don't come to me at lunch. Man, I heard you talk about that before. Yes, and you're going to hear me talk about it again because you need to hear it again. And so let's start with the Sabbath. The Sabbath. The first anchor, the first pillar, the first thing you want to schedule in your Sabbath is every 6 days, you need a 24-hour period where you abstain from your primary vocation. That's what the Sabbath is. I'll give it to you again. A 24-hour period where you abstain from your primary vocation. The Sabbath, of course, and I'm not going to get into the theology too much of this. The Sabbath, of course, was originally introduced as one of God's big ten. Oh, I lost a wheel over here. So the Sabbath was part of God's Big Ten. And occasionally I hear people say, you know, I don't know if we should honor the Sabbath. That's Old Testament or whatever. I'm like, well, which of the other Ten Commandments do you want to kick out? You know, if you don't want to kick out the Sabbath, do you want to kick out the others as well? Thank you, guys. I broke a chair. And they're there and take it and fix it. I know it's very distracting, so we'll just watch them for a minute. Make it awkward for them. Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, Nick. So you're going to take it outside because you don't want people to see the blood? I wonder what sound he'll make when he hits his hand with that. So anyway, the little wheel got caught and I broke it. And it won't be the first thing I break. What were we talking about? Far Side cartoons? Did they get stuck? Did they make it all the way back as part of that? All right, so we're talking about the Sabbath. So the Sabbath originally came down off the mountain. Mount Sinai is one of the big Ten Commandments. And people get all caught up about, well, the Sabbath, you don't need the Sabbath. It's an Old Testament law and all that. And I understand some of that. Same people usually that don't want to tithe too. But which of the other Ten Commandments do you think are no longer relevant? How about that idolater? You know, is that one no longer relevant? Well, you know, once Jesus came, you can make all the idols you want, you know. Once Jesus came, you can murder as many people as you want, really, you know, once Jesus came, you know. So, I mean, if anything, Jesus endorsed the Sabbath, and then he freed us from the laws of the Sabbath. So the concept, I think, is still very, very legitimate, even though we don't have to deal with the laws of the Sabbath. How many of you live in an area where there is a substantial Jewish population and you know some of the laws? A few of us do. It's worth studying. Who's that senator, the Jewish senator from Connecticut? He ran. Joseph Lieberman. Joseph Lieberman wrote a book called The Gift of Rest, which is about the Jewish view. It's a modern day Jewish view of the Sabbath. And when I first started the book, I was so excited about it. I'm like, boy, I'm going to learn, and I'm going to get into it. And, you know, forget his politics. I'm not making a political statement. I don't really even know where he stands on most of the stuff. But I was just like, man, I'm going to dig in. I'm going to learn or whatever. By the time I got to chapter 2, I felt so depressed. Because I'm thinking, there's no way I can keep all these laws. Like, I mean, it's not just take a day off every 7 days. It's like, you can't take this many steps. You can't use electronics. You have to prepare your food the day before. You know, he talks about having to walk home from the Capitol if he gets stuck there on Friday after sundown because he can't use a motorized vehicle. And he talks about walking home in the snow and walking home in the rain. And he talks about those poor Secret Service agents who have to walk with him as part of that. You know, now there's some beautiful imagery in the Sabbath and in the way they do it. But that's what Jesus took away. He took away that legalistic idea of the Sabbath. Kept the good stuff. But now, there is some stuff you can learn. You know, sundown Friday to sundown Saturday is the traditional Jewish Sabbath. And if you've ever been in a hospital on the Sabbath, you know, a lot of times they have the Sabbath elevators because you can only travel so far. If you've ever been to Israel and you've been there on Shabbat, on the Sabbath, boy, I love the Shabbat meal. You know, that's my favorite meal. My least favorite is breakfast the next morning. But anyway, because, you know, they had to cook everything the day before. But there's a lot of beautiful stuff in the Sabbath, in the Shabbat, that we can understand. But what I don't want you to miss is that God wired you up. And the more you cooperate with the way God wired you up, the more productive you're going to be. So here's how God wired you up. To work 6 days, take a day off. Work six, rest one. Now, there's some very important things you do on that day of rest, and I'll get to that in a moment. But we struggle with that in two ways in America. Number one, in America, we've invented this concept that everybody's working for the weekend. Yes, who wrote that song? Is that the Birds too? Everybody's working. I think that's Loverboy, right? Is that Loverboy? Yeah. Thank you, Stan. One guy in the back. Stan, I appreciate it. Dance coaching guy tracking along with me. I took the staff a few weeks ago to see The Journey. I just always find that funny. Like, The Journey staff goes to see The Journey. Now, they don't have Steve Perry anymore. You know this, right? Steve Perry is like on some exotic island near Hawaii somewhere. So they've got this Filipino kid who sounds like Steve Perry. Just exactly like him. Like if you've got that Palladium channel on your TV, you can see this Journey concert like they did. So they got this little short Filipino kid who I like a lot singing with all these old guys in Journey. And he sounds just like Steve Perry. But I can't look at him. It's just like it wrecks the songs. I'm just like, I can't watch him to do this stuff. So we took the Journey pastoral staff to go see The Journey, and then we all wore our Journey church shirts. And everybody was like, where'd you get that tour shirt? I don't know. I don't have, like, all these, like, fanatics. You know, they thought we had, like, a tour shirt that they didn't have. You know, and so we, you know, we thought we were something there watching Journey from the back row at the concert. But you know who opened for them? This is where I was going. Loverboy. Loverboy opened for them. And what I loved about those guys is they knew they were old. So, like, what Journey, they still try to pretend like they're young and hip. And they've got the young guy out front. I understand that. But, you know, these guys in the back, they're, like, old. I mean, they're ancient, you know. Loverboy, they knew they were old. They knew they lost their hair. They knew they were fat. They didn't care. They just wanted to have fun. And then I enjoyed that. I enjoyed their part more than I did the Journey part, even though I didn't know the songs. But they opened with, everybody's working for the... All right, thank you. All right. Got the right crowd here, Scott.
Karaoke done for the day.
Yeah, so tonight over at the Giraffe Cafe. Yeah. The Loverboy and George Strait. All right. Some Far Side cartoons thrown in for good measure. We invented this concept in America. So here's what it became in America. Work five, take two off. Not as effective as the six and one. Now, I'm not against taking two off. There are times when you should take two off. There's times when you have a day off and you have a Sabbath. Because here's what you need to understand. A Sabbath is not always the same as a day off. A Sabbath is a particular kind of day off. Sabbath is a day off, but not every day off is a Sabbath. You understand what I'm saying? So I'll try to flesh that out. So there is a time to take a day off. Sometimes you need to take a Friday off. Sometimes you should take a Monday off. But the Sabbath is a very, very particular type of day off. And you may do some similar things on the Sabbath as you do on your day off, but it is a day that is dedicated unto the Lord. That's what made the Sabbath a Sabbath. And, you know, we can call it Friday night to sundown Saturday, or we can call it Tuesday night to sundown Wednesday. It doesn't really matter. I do like the sundown to sundown concept. I like the idea that the Sabbath begins the night before and carries through the evening and then such, because God actually, you know, when he separated the light from the dark and all that, he kind of did it in that way, but that's neither here nor there. But I do kind of like that concept. But if you can't do that, you know, 8 a.m. one day to 8 a.m. the next day, that's fine. But it's a 24-hour period that you set aside unto the Lord. Now, to Parkinson's law, when you go through your calendar and you block out your Sabbath, it forces you to be more effective during the other six. If there's no other benefit to the Sabbath, and there's a lot of other benefits, but just for the sake of our talk in here, if there's no other benefit to the Sabbath, it's knowing that that day is coming forces you to be more effective during the other six. My favorite image of the Sabbath, and I've got a three-hour resource on this, so I'll get distracted if I'm not careful. My favorite image of the Sabbath is the shepherd who has to get the sheep in the pen because the sundown's coming. And one of the things I love about sundown to sundown is sundown doesn't sneak up on you. You get a warning like 2 or 3 hours in advance, you know. Oh, the sun is going down. Oh, it's dropping in the horizon. You know, I better. And so the shepherd can't just leave the sheep unattended on the Sabbath because the wolves will get them. So he's got to get them in the pen and then get maybe another shepherd or perhaps in some kind of protective area so that the shepherd can Sabbath, but the sheep still have to be safe. So you see, I can't just abandon my church. I can't just go out of touch every 6 days. I have to get my sheep in the pen so that while I am Sabbathing, everything is still well back at the office, back at the church. Do you see where I'm going with this? So this idea of taking care of the sheep and then doing something particular with the sheep on the Sabbath so that everything still goes, because what will happen is a lot of times you get interrupted on the Sabbath. And there are times, by the way, in the Bible where you should get interrupted. You know, the Bible says if a sheep falls in the ditch, you know, you need to go get it out, okay? So it does. But if it's the same sheep every week, you need to fix that. So I've got to get my work done during the 6 days so that when I'm out, Scott can still run CLI and Kimberly can still run the office because I'm out that day. Now, yes, maybe my Sabbath is the same day as his. Don't get too caught up on that. But this is a tremendous time management tip. So if you looked at your calendar right now, do you have the Sabbath scheduled? I will confess, and some of you this will wreck your theology, that I have been known to take a Sabbath violating the 7-day principles. It's not pretty, but sometimes I have to go 8. Sometimes I've been going to go 9. Sometimes I've been caught on the carpet by Carrick and others who care about me in my life, and I've gone a couple of weeks without it. More times than not, however, sometimes it goes the other direction. Sometimes just because of my schedule, I can't wait 7 days, so I have to go 5 and then take a Sabbath so I can get the next 7 because of where I'm going to be. Now, that's not ideal, but I'm a realist, okay? We all live with the tension between the real and an ideal. In an ideal world, it would be the same day, every week. But it's not always that way. But if you're going to cheat one way or another, cheat on the positive side. Take the Sabbath the 6th day out. Take the Sabbath the 5th day out so that you can get the next 7, as it might be. But put it in your calendar. 2005, I think, was the year. I'm having a monthly conversation with one of our financial supporters. In fact, I think he would be fine with me telling you his name. His name is Bryant Wright. He pastors Johnson Ferry Church in Atlanta, Georgia. Anybody know Bryant? Bryant was one of the financial sponsors of the journey, and they came in a little late. So all the other financial partners had rolled off because the 3 years was up, but they came in a little late, so we were still doing it. And part of that benefit of having them as a financial partner is I was able to have a monthly phone call with Bryant. And it was just one of those calls I didn't miss because I got to pick his brain, and here's a guy that pastored a great church, gave a ton of money to missions. He went on just recently to be the president of the Southern Baptist Convention and different things like that. Really, really great leader, really, really great church outside of Atlanta. And so one day we're just chit-chatting, and all of a sudden he proceeds to call me a sinner. Like in my face. And he's a really nice guy. Like he's got that gift. You know, he can say really harsh stuff but make you thank him for it later. I say really soft stuff, and people are like, why are you being so harsh? You know. I'm like, well, why are you calling me a sinner? He's like, you're violating the Sabbath. I said, man, and he says, yeah, he says, you're just violating the Sabbath. And man, sure enough, I had been. Like, I'm a recovering workaholic. Going way back in the day, you know, I used to work 7 days at a computer business, didn't think anything about it. I mean, just, it was nothing. Like, you know, to me, the idea of vacation was you just stop and die for about a week, and then you come back and you run really hard and all this stuff. So he begins to teach me about the Sabbath. And I had a lot of questions about the Sabbath. I'm like, well, what do you do? I mean, you know, if you take the time off, you know, what do you do? Do you answer your phone? Do you answer email? Do you do this stuff? I'll get to that in a moment. But he called me on the carpet, and I traced that back to 2005, and here's why. The next year, I started doing coaching. Next year, I wrote my first book. Next year, The Journey was rated as one of the fastest growing churches in America. And so here we are, 7 years later, 11 books down, one more coming out this year, 1,200 pastors who have gone through the coaching network, 4 more churches have been started out of The Journey, other campuses have been started at The Journey. Last 7 years have been some of the most productive years of my life. And I trace it back to him calling me on the carpet, telling me that I was a sinner. So I stopped doing something, working on the 7th day, and then productivity went through the roof. You say, well, maybe that wasn't the only thing, stage of life, blah, 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 you know, this, that, and the other, you know, compounding effect. I understand all that. But the simple answer is, it was when I got serious about the Sabbath. So do you have a 24-hour period where you abstain from your primary vocation? And I mean abstain from your primary vocation, which for all of us would be the church that we pastor. Now, what do you do on your Sabbath? I just want to say a word about this, and I'll take some questions here about Sabbath if you want, because there's several areas I could go, and I want to at least cover one more before lunch, and I've got 35, 40 minutes to be able to do that, so we're in good shape. But what do you do on the Sabbath? First of all, you want to rest. These all start with R. You've got to rest on your Sabbath. Sometimes people are concerned, especially some of the folks that have been in coaching with me, and they know the Sabbath, and you know, we talk about it a lot and go deep about it in advanced coaching and different things. Some people say, well, you know, I'm just so tired when I get to the Sabbath. That's a good thing. You should be tired when you get to the Sabbath because you worked your proverbial behind off during the previous 6 days. So that says that you did something right. It says that you should be tired. You are going to be tired every 6 days whether you take a day off or not. So the Sabbath should be a little bit of rest. And so there's nothing wrong with that. If you look at in the Jewish tradition of the Sabbath, you know, it starts with a meal, a very long, slow meal, because you've been running 90 to nothing, or 90-11, as they say in the Midwest. You know, you've been running that, and then all of a sudden the Sabbath forces you to slow down. And so here comes the sun going below the horizon. You're starting to slow down. You're starting to get back into the natural rhythm of life, and you begin to realize, I'm tired. And that's okay. You should be tired. If you get to your Sabbath and you're not tired, maybe you didn't do a whole lot during the previous 6 days. Now, you will become less tired the longer you do the Sabbath, because one of the reasons you're going to be so tired at first is because you've been violating it. and you're fatigued. Okay, so not fatigued, but tired. So there is a rest. Now, there's two types of rest. There's passive rest, which can be good. Yeah, nothing wrong with passive rest. Just go to bed early. Wayne Cordero taught me this principle. He said, it's okay to sleep in. Just sleep in on the front end. Isn't that pretty cool? You know, so if you normally go to bed at 11 o'clock, or you normally go to bed at 10 o'clock, or you normally go to bed at 11 o'clock, go to bed a couple hours early. Because most likely you're not going to be able to sleep a couple hours late the next day. One, as you get older, your body doesn't allow it. That's a curse, you know. The other thing is, you know, you got stuff to do. I mean, you know, just because you're Sabbathing doesn't mean the kids aren't still going to school or, you know, this, that, and the other. You still may have stuff to do, and that's okay. So you can maybe go to bed on the front end a little bit. What I find in passive rest is sometimes the things that you normally do to rest, you just have a little more freedom with on the Sabbath. Freedom to go to bed a little bit earlier, freedom to read. But what I like mainly about rest is active rest, because there is such a thing. There is active rest, and that's the second area of your Sabbath that I want to talk about, which is recreation. Recreation is how we say it. It's how the cool kids say it anyway. Recreation, recreation. This is active rest. These are the things that fill you with energy. These are the things that add to your tank. They put gas back in the tank. They put, you know, coffee back in the cup, whatever image you want to have here. So on your Sabbath, one of the things you want to do is you want to do things that will actively fill you up. Now, there may be a fine line between recreation and passive rest. For example, I like to go see a movie on the Sabbath. You know, nothing wrong with that. That's a little bit passive because you're just kind of sitting there, but it does refill you. I mean, there's something about being in the movie theater. I mean, nobody else is there because it's the middle of the day. And, you know, you're sitting there and it just kind of fills you up. Get to drink that big drink, you know, at least if you're not in New York, because Bloomberg won't allow you to drink little tiny drinks in New York like that. You can have 40 ounces of marijuana in your pocket. You just can't have 40 ounces of Coca-Cola. Anyway, it's a crazy day we live in. You know, so there is something to that. There is something to the active rest. You know, go see a movie. You normally work out. Maybe, you know, if you're a runner or a bike rider like Jeff back here, you know, you go on your long bike ride. You go on your long run on that day. You get to figure out what that is. It's really some of the stuff that you would normally do, but you're just kind of expanding it. You normally read 15, 20 minutes a day on your Sabbath. You read for an hour. Now, if that didn't fill you up, then it doesn't fill you up, you know, but you got to figure out kind of what those things are that kind of fill you up, and you recreate, you recreate. And you want to do all those things first. You want to rest and you want to recreate. And I know it gets into some issues with, you know, if you have a spouse that works and their Sabbath is on the same day for you, or some of you in here may be bivocational. I know that gets into some issues, but I'm telling you, if you're serious enough about the priority, those things will work out. You know, Scott can give you a testimony about being bivocational and being able to take the Sabbath. I mean, he willfully chose to spend one less day on the weekend to lead his church so that he could honor the Sabbath. And I mean, he worked a full-time job during the week, and he only had the weekend to do his church, or at night to do his church. But he said, I'm not going to violate the Sabbath. And he can tell you that story if you're interested in that. So you rest, you recreate, and then you reflect. You reflect. On the Sabbath, this is what makes this day different than a day off. On a day off, you're generally just getting errands done. You know, you're taking the dry cleaning, you're running to the hardware store, you know, you got to get the car oil changed or whatever. A lot of stuff you can do, and Parkinson's law will allow that stuff to fill your entire day if you're not careful. And you may have to do a little bit of that on your Sabbath. I'm not so strict that I think you can't run an errand or, you know, do something like that. But what I try to do is move that during my week. And, you know, get the errands done during the week, get the oil changed during the week, you know, pay somebody is what I do, because I can't even change a light bulb, so I just have to get the handyman around the corner. You know, a guy can come in for $20, and he can fix everything that would take me 5 weeks to fix. And so I try to move in that direction to free up the Sabbath. But that's a day off, and there's a time for a day off, and we can talk about that if you want. But one of the things you want to do on the Sabbath that makes the Sabbath different, and you don't want to do this on the front end. This is not like a Friday night activity or even a Saturday morning activity, but maybe a Saturday afternoon activity. You want to reflect. And what you want to do is look back over the previous 7 days, reflect back over the previous 7 days and say, how am I doing? You know, did I get it all done this week? Did I get those sheep in the pen? You know, did I lose my temper? just for the sake of time, one of my favorite activities in this area, and you don't have to do this every week, but one of my favorite activities is to go through the fruit of the Spirit. You know the fruit of the Spirit, right? New Testament, Paul writing. Everybody with me? Okay, just checking the crowd here. Galatians or something. I don't know how to pronounce the book. But it's by toward the end of the chapter, you know, lower right-hand side in my Bible. Something like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. Did I get it right? There's nine of them. There's nine of them. I did a series one time on the seven deadly sins. We called it seven. Seven deadly sins. We did seven deadly sins. It's really great, especially if you're in a high Catholic culture. Everybody wants to know about the seven deadly sins. So a couple of years later, I got all excited. I'm like, we're going to do a follow-up series with that. We're going to call it eight. It's going to be about the fruit of the Spirit. Man, we had eight. We had designs. We were excited. We had that thing scheduled out on our preaching calendar. Somebody comes over and says, Nelson, I got some bad news for you. There's not eight. There's nine. There's nine fruits of the Spirit, not eight. Wrecked our whole preaching calendar that year. You know, I didn't know what to do. I'm like, well, what are we going to do? We got to do nine, you know. So we did nine. It worked out okay, but we had to do it in two parts. We had to do five up here, and then we had to come back later and pick up the other four as part of that. So it kind of messed me up there. But there's nine fruits of the Spirit. So you reflect back, and you say, okay, how did I do showing love? The opposite of love is not hate, as you well know. The opposite of love is apathy or indifference, yeah. So how did I do with the proactive love? You can do this with different domains in your life. How did I do showing love to my spouse? How did I do showing love to my kids? How did I do showing love to my coworkers? To love to lost people? Whatever you want to do, you can take it in various directions. But, you know, love and then joy. You know, difference between happiness and joy, right? Happiness is based on circumstances. Joy is based on your relationship with Christ. So that was my joy level this past week. Love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, faithfulness. You know, another line. I probably messed it up there. But, you know, write it down in your journal. Make a list. Rate yourself. How did I do? Reflect back. And one of the things, one of the reasons I think God gave us the Sabbath is 6 days in the wrong direction is enough. Let's get it corrected. So you do a little course correction. And you get back on track. Say, okay, God, forgive me for all of that. You know, call somebody up on your Sabbath. Or make a note to call them the day after your Sabbath. Fix that. If there's something going wrong, you know, the difference between a problem and like a major problem is sometimes how quickly you fix it. You know, the leak in the roof is a problem. It becomes a major problem, a catastrophe, if you let it go unfixed. So, you know, you can do some repair there. Also, you know, don't be too hard on yourself. Some of you are so guilty. You know, just say, God, I'm going to do better. And I'm going to move in that area. I also reflect on my calendar. You know, did I get everything done this past week that I said I was going to get done? Did I schedule myself too tightly? Did I have enough margin? You know, did I miss date night? Was I distracted on date night? You know, whatever it might be. So I reflect back, not to beat myself up, but to do what Kim Blanchard called feed forward. You know, you look back so that you can change the future. My mindset is not too much to live in the past. And, you know, if I've offended you in the past, I've probably forgotten. If you've offended me, the good news is I've probably forgotten. So, you know, that's a problem on one hand, a blessing on the other. But, you know, I don't beat myself up too much in this, but some of you might. And so I'm not talking about beating yourself up and, you know, all that. But I am talking about looking back and making course corrections, making changes, doing some evaluation. And then the fourth R, rest, recreation, reflection, is proflexion. Proflexion. Yeah, I know it doesn't start with an R. You know how hard it is to find a forward-looking word that starts with R? So the way you do that, you do little p, big R, O. And proflexion is not a word. I just made that up too. But it's pretty good. It's pretty good. You proflect in your calendar. Now again, this is not something you want to do early in the Sabbath because you don't want to get too caught up. But late in the Sabbath day, look over the next week. And you start praying over those meetings. You know, you got that difficult meeting with the staff person. Say, God, help me to live out the fruit of the Spirit with that staff person. You know, you got date night coming up. You say, hey, God, you know, I'm gonna start the date night a half hour early this time because I need that half hour to decompress between work and between date night. You take the lessons from the past and you put them in your calendar for the future. Now, this is the one that Scott hates the most because this is where I start changing things. Like, I'm like, Scott, I'm just too scheduled. Have you ever seen the webinar schedule he gives me? Sometimes I'm doing like seven webinars in a week. I'm like, I'm not going to do that Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. He's like, but what about those Australians? I'm like, okay, I'll do Wednesday at 7 o'clock. But, you know, because sometimes we do them late at night for the rest of the world or whatever. But I start making these changes. I'm too overbooked. I'm too overscheduled. I can't cancel this event, but I can shorten something else. You know, the other day I had a situation like this, and I said, instead of it being a face-to-face meeting, I'm just going to do it by phone. Now, you don't want to do that all the time. You got to meet with people. But I was able to take like a one-hour meeting and turn it into about a 20-minute meeting because we did it by phone. We didn't have to do all that pesky stuff like, how are you, and how's your family, and you're looking good. We could just get to the heart of it, okay? Now, you can't do that all the time, but you learn these little things that you can do. You learn that you need to schedule. You need to readjust. You know, you can move a morning meeting to the afternoon meeting, so now you have a block of time. Doesn't really make a difference if you do it morning or afternoon, but you look over the future, and there's some very specific things you can look at there, and we'll get to those as we go along. But that's a pretty good Sabbath day, you know? Throw in a long lunch with your spouse, throw in going to have lunch with your kids at school if they're young enough, or, you know, going to pick up the grandkids on the way home from school, or making some phone calls to your parents or whatever. You want to add into that. You say, well, man, I feel a little stressed now that I've got all this stuff added into my Sabbath. Well, you're not doing it every week. You know, you don't have to do all these things every week, but you have an intentional plan for how you're going to use that day. Not in the 618 laws of the Old Testament, but maybe four or five, you know, that you say, okay, I can handle. Make sense? All right, we've got 21 seconds here before I have to move on. Are there any questions about the Sabbath, just the Sabbath, not Parkinson's law, not any of this stuff, just the Sabbath? Okay, let's at least cover one more. One more. And I really am debating about which one this should be, because there's a natural connection to the Sabbath and the other two, but I'm going to go ahead and cover this one. And because you know this one's coming, you know I was going to teach this one. So maybe it'll create a little bit of anticipation about tomorrow. And what's the other three going to be? So let's do this one a second, which is worship. You want to schedule time in for worship. Now you're saying, are you talking about the worship services at the church? No, I'm talking about your personal worship. Now, I know worship is an everyday thing. I believe that. You know, pray without ceasing, God says, and he gives you the power to do that. And that's all really important. But just like we would expect the people in our church to make a priority of weekly worship, we should make a priority of weekly worship. Now, you can stack this, by the way. You can do, like, if your Sabbath is Friday night to Saturday night, you know, you could make your worship night on Friday night. But when you think about worship in your life, do you have these inputs of worship, these scheduled times of worship? So I'm going to give you three types that you need: daily, weekly, and intermittent. Just common spelling on that. Daily, weekly, and it's easy for me to say, intermittent. My spell checker said that's spelled I-N-T-E-R-M-I-T-T-E-N-T. Does that sound right, Tommy? Am I saying that right? Intermittent? Okay. Never teach over your own head. That's a good lesson, right? So, I used to put together these big conferences, and there was a lot of demand at the time at the conference for somebody to come in and speak on evolution. Now, I don't get into that. You know, personally, I mean, I've pretty much settled it in my mind. It's fine. You know, I don't have to think a lot. But they asked for this. So I went back into the speaker's room because I'm, you know, running this conference. I said, who here has a lecture on evolution? There's a lot of interest in it. And, you know, if we could do a bonus session, like, before the main session tomorrow, I think you could get a pretty good crowd and help some people. Who wants to do this? One guy raises his hand. His name happens to be Jeff. He's right here on the front row. This is Jeff. No, I'm just kidding. It's not this Jeff. This is Jeff, but it's not that Jeff. But if you see him later and you want to pretend like it is, that'd be a really cool thing to do. Jeff, give me your lecture on evolution. So anyway, so I'm sitting there, and his name happened to be Jeff, but you wouldn't know him. And if you did, there's a bunch of Jeffs. So Jeff says, well, I'll do it. So we promoted it, man. We got up that night. We said, hey, you've asked for it. Tomorrow morning at the conference, if you want to come in an hour early, you know, Jeff's going to teach you on evolution and answer all the questions the skeptics have about this, that, and the other. You know, boy, I mean, it was like packed. I mean, especially for like an 8 o'clock in the morning kind of thing. I'm sitting there on the front row. The colleague who's with me, the Scott of that conference, his name was Michael. About halfway through the lecture, Michael leans over and he says, mental note, never teach above your own head. Because not only did we not know what Jeff was talking about, Jeff didn't know what Jeff was talking about. So I don't know what intermittent is, but if I stall long enough, you'll be ready for lunch and I won't even have to talk about it. But Let's do daily worship. Daily worship is your daily time with God, of course. Now, everybody does this differently, and I'm open to that. I don't know why God has allowed me to have such a great love and appreciation for pastors, but I do. And I don't know why God has entrusted me with this ministry and how long he'll let me do it. I don't know. But, you know, when I started coaching pastors back in 2006, it was just a group of church planters who were trying their best. But, you know, some were Baptist, some were Assembly of God, some were charismatic, non-denominational, and all this. And, you know, then it went beyond church planters and it became, you know, just traditional churches. And then, you know, I remember the first time I did a coaching network and half the network was older than me. For a while, that was a game. Like, people would show up wondering how old I was and all this stuff, you know. And I don't know. I never knew if that was good or bad. Did they expect me to be, like, really young or did they expect me to be old? And I have two last names, so it creates a lot of problems. And I understand. But, you know, then it's like now, you know, I look at that list of all these pastors I've coached. How many of you have been through, like, a formal coaching network with me? Let me see your hands. So you look at just around this room, I mean, they're very different ages. In fact, we have an 81-year-old in this next coaching network. Yeah. So I've now officially coached someone who's 21 and someone who's 81 as part of that. For a while, a lot of people would join the coaching network, and they were in their 60s, and they wanted to join the network just to finish well. And we kind of developed a whole track. In fact, I've kept a lot of people from retiring because they got so excited in the network, they stay on for a few more years as well. And you know, so I have this great appreciation, this great love for pastors of all different denominations and all different stripes. And, you know, you sit in one of my conferences and, you know, you've got this Lutheran guy sitting right next door to, you know, a Pentecostal. And one's rich and one's poor because all Lutherans are rich. And, you know, it's just this dramatic kind of thing. And, you know, so I don't know. So, but I tell you all that to say, like, what that's taught me is there's no one way that pastors should worship on a daily basis. But I can tell you, you should. You should. I don't know what that means to you. I think Larry Osborne probably helped me as much as anybody with this. Larry wrote a book, and I think they changed the name of it, but originally it was called The Contrarian's Guide to Christianity. Do you know that book? Larry has a great new book out on hypocrites and Pharisees. It's actually mainly about Pharisees, but I enjoyed the part about hypocrites as much as anything. But, you know, Larry says, look, don't get caught up on it, you know. It's not about reading five chapters of Psalms and one chapter of Proverbs or reading through the New Testament. You just got to have a plan for you. And some of you, it's meditation. Meditation is a lost art. Not meditation where you repeat the same thing over and over, but meditation as thinking deeply in the presence of God. You know, that can be a time of worship. You look at your calendar, you look at what you've got going on, you're just thinking deeply in the presence of God. Others, it's nature. I've never been a huge nature person. But, you know, I've learned to do that. You know, in New York, I learned to go up high. And there was something about that, you know, to get up above everything, high, looking it out, the whole area. That was beautiful. Used to do a coaching network over in Tampa. You know, I would schedule a little time before my flight to go over by the beach and have an hour to sit out there on the beach and look at the golf and, you know, just practice that. But you've got to figure that out for whatever that is. Now, some of you, and I know some because I know you really well, it's the same time every single day. And your time with the Lord is a lot like your breakfast. You eat the exact same thing every single day. And that's extremely legitimate. The danger is if you think everybody else has to operate that way, okay? You know, I used to travel with a guy, and he was always, you know, if your quiet time isn't growing by a minute every year you're in the Lord, you know, you're not spiritual or whatever. And I started doing the math. I'm like, well, gosh, if you became a Christian when you're like 18, you know, by the time you get to like 70, you know, half your morning. And you know, I read the old stuff about give your mornings to God, and I'm a big fan of that and stuff too. But you got to have it for whatever it is with you. Because if you don't have it, leakage or decline or creep or whatever it is will begin to set in. And I heard Heibel say it, but I'm sure others have said it, that when it comes to your spiritual life, you're either gaining altitude or losing altitude. You're never gliding. And I've tried to glide. And the truth is, I can trick you for a little while with my gliding, you know. I can skip breakfast and be okay today. I can skip breakfast and be okay tomorrow. But if I skip breakfast long enough, the consequences will catch up with me. You know, we often think of the opposite. Wouldn't it be cool if, like, if every time you ate something bad, it was immediately obvious the next day? You go eat a Big Mac, and then it just, like, shows up, like, right here. Oh, yes, Big Mac. I better not do that anymore, you know. But life is not that way. Failure is really just a few minor mistakes repeated every day. That's really what it is. And you can translate that into your spiritual life. And Okay, just real quick, I'll tell you this. When you coach 1,200 pastors, not everybody makes it. You know, I mean, I wish everybody did, but not everybody finishes the network. I don't really know why. You know, people will cancel one week before the final session. I'm like, look, it's already paid for. Just, you know, finish it or whatever, because, you know, we don't like to give refunds. I got to get to that, by the way. But because the ministry has to run, even if you cancel, you know, we prepared for your spot. So anyway, but, you know, when you coach 1,200, not everybody makes it. And unfortunately, in the midst of those 1,200, there's been three or four that have had moral failures. And some pretty well-known in that. And so because I have this relationship with them, I called and asked all the questions you wanted me to ask. How did it happen? What were you thinking? When did it happen? How far in advance? And, you know, it's funny, there's no real rhyme or reason. You know, you look at the two or three that have had sexual moral failures. One was like a spur-of-the-moment decision. Wrong place, wrong time, wrong woman, and they did it. Now, you know, were the seeds of his destruction sown well in advance? Yes, they were. But the decision was more of a right there. Others thinking about it, plotting, planning, going over in their mind. You know, I mean, they had a long history of like, so they knew exactly when the opportunity came what they were going to do. Which is worse? I don't know. You know, one says that you don't have good safeguards in your life. The other says that you don't have good accountability. I don't know. But what I have learned is they all trace it back to this daily thing. You know, because walking with God, living with God, it's a daily thing. It's a daily worship. Do I struggle with it? Yeah, man, I struggle with it, you know. I struggle with it. But it's in your calendar, making time for it, setting priorities. And yes, there's a role for breath prayers, and yes, there's a role for, hey, I got the gift of an hour. Boy, isn't that a great thing? A meeting gets canceled, you got the gift of an hour. You know, so the conference gets out early, you got the gift of some time. You get to the airport, you get through security fast, you got the gift. You know, so this awareness of giving that to God and using that time for worship. You can figure that out in your own life, but it's got to be there. Good? Then I would say there's weekly worship. Now, weekly worship is difficult for us because we are the priest in the temple conducting the weekly worship. And I don't want to take that image too far, but I do find it sometimes hard to worship at my own worship services. Now, maybe you don't. Maybe you're wired up that way. At the Manhattan campus where Carrick gives leadership to, they do four services. So they got 3, you know, 10, 11, 30, 1, and then an evening service. So back when I was younger and I used to be able to preach all four of those, now it's like, which one are we going to show the video of? Okay, let's hope we get a good recording at 10 because I don't know if I can make it to 1, you know. But I would actually be able to carve out some worship time by the time I got to the evening service. You know, so I could do the morning, and by the time I got to the third, I have a very good rote memory issue. So I could pretty much deliver that evening service and be able to go into the worship service, and I could find my weekly worship in that service. Last few years, being down in Boca, we just have one service, you know, and it's pressure. You know, church is growing, a lot of problems, new people, a lot of unbelievers. I don't get to worship a lot at that one. Number one, it's just one service. And even when we do two, it's still not quite enough with two. So I've had to find it. Now, early on, this was different. When I first started the journey, I stayed very much connected to my home church, which is Saddleback Church. So in the midst of all the pressures, I was working bivocational. I was trying to start a church on the side. You know, Kelly and I would carve out Saturday night to log online and watch Rick and watch the worship service. And I think they still do it, but in those days, they broadcast the worship and the sermon. So we'd pull out our little, you know, laptop, and right there at the house on Saturday night, you know, we could tune into their 4:30 service, which was 7:30 on the East Coast, and we could have our own worship service right there. Then I remember for years, things were so busy, and I would get home so late that it would be me and Jonathan Falwell at 10 o'clock at night, you know, and it would be the Liberty Hour. And man, I get so excited. Charles Billingsley would come on and sing these old hymns, and then Jonathan Falwell would preach, and man, it was just, that was my hour. As part of that. Now, Kelly had already gone to bed. You know, she had to find her hour somewhere else. But, you know, that was my hour. Then, you know, then I found another church that had like a Wednesday night service, and I could go there on Wednesday nights. And then a Saturday night service, I could go there on Saturday nights. I don't know what it is for you, but if you're not doing this, I would challenge you to seriously consider adding it to your schedule. And I'm going to be so bold to say, if you can't get it weekly, every other week. If you can't get it every other week, at least get it monthly. But you need that time of corporate worship. It's good to do it with the body if you can. Good to be involved there if you can. And I know that creates problems where I give my tithe and all that. So I'm not saying you should abuse or, you know, cut from your church or whatever. But then from time to time, when you're not preaching, it's good to just worship at your church. That's a beautiful thing. You know, I love those Sundays. It doesn't happen very often, but a couple times a year where I just get to go in like anybody else. I get to check my son into Journey Kids. I get to go in and get a bulletin. I get to go in and have a seat, and I just get to enjoy the whole worship service. But you need that weekly. You're created for that weekly. Cautiously, because of your role, and you do have a limitation in your life because of your calling. It does create some problems, but it's not insurmountable. Next is intermittent. This would be something you plan, whether it's every year or every 2 years or two or three times a year, I don't know, but it's where you have this massive commitment to worship. We use an R word often to call this, but I don't like the R words because they all are passive, but we often call this a spiritual retreat or a revival. A retreat is what we often call this. Now, that retreat could just simply be you at home with a couple of days off. Could be going to a conference. You know, not this kind of conference, but there are conferences that are tremendous worship experiences. You know, I haven't been lately, but I used to go to the pastor's conference at First Baptist Phoenix, or excuse me, First Assembly. Gosh, Tommy would roll over if he knew. But First Assembly at Phoenix. And I wonder if they have one at First Baptist. Probably not. But anyway, First Assembly out in Phoenix. You know, that really, it really was a worship conference. That's what it was. You know, you go to the Hillsong conferences. That's really what they are. They're really worship conferences. I mean, you get more to that. But there needs to be sometimes these massive injections of worship into your life. And it shouldn't replace the daily. It shouldn't replace the weekly. But sometimes we have to let it. And it's good just to have it there. And I know you can't go to everything and you can't invest in everything. And I understand that. But even at something like this, what if you took a couple hours tonight and used that for worship? I know downtown Disney's tempting. I saw some of you over there last night walking around. We were over there last night walking around. But instead of going at 6 o'clock, you go at 7. And you take that hour and use that for worship. You know, we don't start till 9 in the morning. For those of you that are owls, that's early enough. For those of you that are larks, you're going to be up early. So in the morning, you know, tell everybody back home it starts at 8. Not to lie, but just to take that extra hour along the way. The advanced coaching guys that are in the room and they happen to all be guys in this case, but you know, if it was guys and ladies or whatever, sometimes they fly in early and take a half day of worship on the front end or stay late and take a half day of worship on the back end or even add in some of these other things. But there is something to that intermittent thing. And so you put these in your calendar. You put your Sabbath in your calendar. If worship overlays with your Sabbath, all the better. If it doesn't, you know, you work that in. And then occasionally you plan these retreats. I really try, and I'll talk more about this tomorrow, not to start the year until I've planned the year. Not to start the month until I've planned the month. Not to start the day until I've planned the day.